Welcome back in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Want you to be a part of the show this hour. What are you looking for this coming weekend? Alabama and Auburn, both non-conference games. Obviously, don't know how much they can prove, don't know how much we can learn, but there are things that we're looking for. We want to know what you're looking for. 800-239-9569. 800-239-WJOX. Thoughts, questions on other big games around college football? Phone's going to be open this hour. You can be a part of the show also on Twitter, at Mac and Cube. That Twitter feed, as always, brought to you by our friends at Royal Buick GMC, at Cole Kubelik, at Greg McElroy, at RunDM6. Can follow us as well as the station at WJOX945. Greg, realignment obviously is sort of ongoing right now in college football, and Sunbelt Commissioner Keith Gill has released a statement this morning saying, "The Sun Belt Conference could not have positioned itself better for this moment as the landscape shifts across conferences. We have never been stronger. The Sun Belt is the best non-autonomy FBS conference in the country. We were the only non-A5 conference with two teams ranked in both preseason polls. We finished last year with two teams ranked in the final CFP, and we've led the FBS in postseason winning percentage the last 5 years. I spoke to our conference CEOs and ADs yesterday about the current realignment in a few FBS conferences and how it puts us in a more advantageous position for our programs to thrive. Throughout this process, if we identify a school that adds value to the Sun Belt, we'll certainly consider them for membership. We feel very good about the quality of our schools. We take pride in who we are, and we'll continue to build our programs and our great conference." So I don't know if that's just a giant humble brag as to what the conference has accomplished the last few years, or just putting people on notice that we're willing to listen. Not exactly sure why this needed to be put out, but I feel like every conference commissioner right now feels like they have to say something about realignment and how it's happening.
Yeah, and understandably, I mean, you don't want to be caught like Bob Bowlesby was a couple weeks ago when he had no inclination about Texas and Oklahoma sniffing around, right? So I feel like every conference, for the most part, has been relatively proactive about the moves that could be coming, whether it's a statement. The thing is, these statements that these conference commissioners are making, while they have to make them, they mean absolutely nothing. I mean, it's not that, like, for instance, the Alliance. Like, the statement that the Alliance made means nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It's not worth anything. It's not worth the paper that it's written on. So we can talk all we want about the Sun Belt, the American, the Big 12, and their now push for expansion, and obviously Houston, BYU, UCF, and Cincinnati all going to accept their invitation to the Big 12 probably in a matter of minutes. But all things considered, Cole, it doesn't matter. And the Big 12 could fold tomorrow because Kansas and Iowa State decided to go to the Big 10. Let's say that invitations are handed out from the Pac-12 to Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and TCU. I mean, wouldn't surprise me at all if everything that happens right now is for naught. And I think the way it relates to our footprint is UAB. Where does UAB end up in this whole situation? Because I don't think Conference USA, with all due respect to Conference USA, is their ultimate destination. I think their ultimate destination is probably in the American. And that'd be great for the league, and it'd be great, obviously, for UAB with their recent commitment to athletics and their athletic department. So it'd be really interesting to watch, but a lot of movement that's likely not going to stop here at any time soon.
No, absolutely not. So movement probably going to be happening for that Auburn offense Saturday afternoon against Alabama State. If you're Mike Bobo, if you're Brian Harsin, Greg, you're putting this game plan together, you know what's coming up next. And I understand that publicly and even face-to-face with the team, they're not going to sit there and say, well, we're saving this for Penn State, or we're going to run this against Penn State, or we're trying to set this play up for Penn State. But, you know, internally, those are conversations that they're having. How much do you want to show? How much do you want to add? Because it's an interesting conundrum in that you've got this offense that these guys haven't really run in live situations. Certain plays that you want them to have a feel for, begin to get comfortable with, but at the same time, this is a game that you're going to need everything you've got up in Happy Valley in a week and a half. What would your game plan be? What would your mentality be as far as some of the things that you know you've worked, that you know you have, and putting them out there this week against Alabama State as opposed to maybe saving them for Penn State the following week?
I would put it all out there. I mean, why not? I don't think you're going to need to keep things up your sleeve. I'm just not a believer. I've never been a huge believer in the element of surprise. I believe in execution. And the more you can execute.
You and Brian Kelly both.
Yeah. He's in favor of it. I've been a believer in execution. Man, I don't think. Look, Penn State knows who. It's not like Brian Hartz is a first-time head coach. I mean, like, they can go back and watch Boise State film from a million years ago. They can go back and watch Mike Bobo film from a million years ago. We know what Derek Mason is as a defensive coordinator. It's not like the element of surprise. If you look hard enough, you can find it. And you think these coaches haven't spent time throughout the course of the offseason looking and diving into what these coaches did in previous stops? I mean, obviously they have. Their livelihood depends on it. So I'm not a believer in it. I would run all the stuff that I'm going to run next week. Now, various levels of presentation. That's how I would change. I would still run my base stuff, but I might give you a few less motions, a few less shifts, save some of those for next week, but run the same plays. Like, I want to run the same plays that I'm going to run next week, because I need to know that if we can't run it right now against this level of competition in front of our home crowd, what are we going to be able to do on the road in a whiteout in Happy Valley? I have always been a huge believer in run what you're going to run. Now, show it a little differently in the big games. Maybe a different formation, a different motion. Run the same play, but a different personnel grouping that's running that same play. But I need to know that these guys can execute at the highest level of efficiency for me to feel confident enough in dialing up some of these plays next week. So I'd throw the kitchen sink at Alabama State, but I would do it in a very base and generic way formationally and not show some of my best motions and shifts.
Well, and I think, too, what it allows you to do, one thing that I'll be sort of paying attention to at Auburn or the next guys, you talked about this with Alabama earlier, how some of the other tight ends that Auburn could potentially use, you want to see how deep you go there. I still think the running back room, something that's very interesting to watch at Auburn. We know what Tank Bigsby is. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get, you know, maybe 3-4 series of work and then him be out, him be done. Let some of the younger guys step in, see who you really believe is going to be a real contributor for you next week if you have to give somebody else a couple of carries in that game outside of Tank and Shivers. And that number one receiver. I mean, we've talked about the go-to receiver. If they need it, who's it going to be? You know, do you want to try to find a way to put someone, an individual, in positions to go out and make some plays for you this week? Just kind of see how they react to it. See how they react to certain coverages, routes, just knowing that they're going to get the ball in certain situations and sort of how that plays out. Defensively, I don't know what we'll get in this game as far as something being proved to me. You'd like to see T.D. Moultrie have another good game, see some of the edge guys continue to win one-on-ones, build some confidence. Obviously, I think for a player like J.J. Pegues, this is an important game. This is a big game because he'll be able to grab valuable reps and continue to go forth sort of proving that he can be somebody that really helps this defensive line, because we know physically he has the ability, he has the tools, but just don't know exactly how much they're going to be able to rely on him right now as an every-down defensive lineman. Athletically, he's there. We know that. Know he's got the talent. He's got skill set. But I want to see some of those interior defensive linemen, just how much we really think we're going to be able to lean on certain guys that we could put into our lineup if I'm on that Derek Mason coaching staff and rely upon first down, second down, third down, not just up 14, not just in pass rush situations, but can you be an every down player for what we're asking you to do in our scheme?
Yeah, and I think that that's a big question mark, is not what they're going to look like offensively with Bobo and running game and offensive line, which, you know, I'd like to all see take strides here in week two, because I think your offensive line could showcase another level of continuity in week two as compared to week one, even though last week, man, they passed the test with flying colors. Defensively, that's where I'm not saying I have concerns, but my antenna's up a little bit more. Because I think that when we get on the road to Penn State, you're going to face an offense with some dynamic weapons. Now, Han Dotson's legit. Sean Clifford, maybe not the most consistent player, but when he's hot, he's hot. They have obviously really good personnel at running back as well. So I want to see this defense put together a four-quarter effort. I want to see a pass rush. Like you said, T.D. Moultrie, I'm not sure there is a more important person on their defensive side of the football outside of Zakobi McClain. Zakobi McClain's the best defensive player they have. Papo's not far behind him. But I don't think either one are as important as T.D. Moultrie because of what he could potentially provide off the edge. Ham or Derek, I mean, either one. I feel really, really, really encouraged by what I've seen, but I need to know that they can do it against an increased level of competition. So that's the biggest thing I want to see, man. Can you get a guy that can dent the pocket in the middle, and can you potentially figure out a way to get off the edges and create some problems?
800-239-9569, 800-239-WJOX. Did you like the way T.J. Finley was handled in the Auburn offense last week? Because we've talked about Bo Nix. He made some progressions. There were some things that we liked. Did some things that maybe we hadn't seen him do last year. I know there was one play, Greg, where is I think late second quarter, and out of the gun takes a snap, and you almost see him take like a step and a half, two steps to his right, like he's going to immediately roll, but he stops himself, and then he was able to stay in and deliver an accurate pass and complete a pass. Almost those old bad habits immediately setting in, but caught himself like, boom, oh no, that's I can't revert back to that, and kind of shows you some of the coaching catching up and maybe what he might be able to turn into by the time this season's over of being a more comfortable pocket passer. But T.J. Finley last week, T.J. Finley this week, your expectation, how would you like to see him handled as someone who might have to be a contributor for this Auburn offense down the road?
I'd like to see a little more of him, personally. I mean, last week in the game that got sideways, I didn't feel like we saw enough of him. You know, that would have been the one critique that I would have had last week. Not saying he needs to go in and start throwing it all over the lot. You know, I'm not saying you run up the score. That's not what I'm suggesting. I just would have liked to have seen maybe him a little earlier. Did I need to see 22 throws from Bo Nix? Maybe. You know, he's got to grow some as well. But this week, now knowing where T.J. Finley could potentially be relied upon, I'd like to see a little bit bigger grasp from him. I want to see him get maybe 10 throws. And it doesn't need to be a crazy amount of throws. I want to see him be efficient when given those opportunities. So make the most of those few opportunities that he may have. So feel pretty confident in T.J. Finley as a flat-out thrower. Don't feel super confident in T.J. Finley as an all-around player. And I think that confidence could potentially grow with an increased workload this week and maybe a few more opportunities.
All right, let's go to the Michelob Ultra hotline. Thoughts, questions, concerns you have on Auburn and their non-conference opponents this week, Alabama, their non-conference opponent this week, any other games around the SEC or college football, 800-239-WJOX gets you into the Michelob Ultra hotline, where Jay in Birmingham joins us now to talk Auburn offense. What's on your mind, Jay?
Hey, Cole. I don't really have any concerns about the game this week, but I got a question for you about the Gus Malzahn era. You know, Gus's forte was running the football, but we never seemed to really produce offensive linemen. Was there something about Gus's offensive system that allowed other schools to negatively recruit, or what is the reason why, you know, when his main focus and main goal was to run the football between the tackles, why wasn't he able to, you know, get those guys in there and run the ball in this last, what? You know, 3 years?
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Jay. I think that Gus's system does not really mirror or mimic a lot of what you're going to get in the NFL. It's a downhill run scheme, Greg, but it's not. It's one that is more designed to create space to be able to run the football than it is to move your opponents to be able to run the football. Now, that can change when you add elite offensive line play to it. A la 2013 with not just offensive line play, but when you add a Greg Robinson and then you add a Jay Prosh, guys who can physically move you, then it becomes utterly dominant and completely different. But on a down-in, down-out basis, and it's actually, I think the offensive line portion of why it doesn't translate well to the NFL has less to do with the running game as it does the passing game. When you're slide protection, or basically just taking one step to the left, one step to the right, and protecting a certain gap, and you know you have help on either side, it doesn't prepare you for the NFL. It doesn't get you ready to do what you're going to do at the NFL level. You're not taking professional pass sets at that point. So I do think that some schools probably use that against them in recruiting. and said, why do you want to go play somewhere that's not going to get you ready to be, play in the NFL? There's probably a track record that they could have showed prior to Greg Robinson of guys who had not been drafted very high. That's not going to help. That worked against you a little bit. And then it's not hard for a coach to just go show what guys are doing. And then right after that, put an NFL film on and say, you see these guys doing this? No, let me show you what we do, and then let me show you what the Packers do. Let me show you what we do, and then let me show you what the Falcons do. And if it looks more similar, obviously that's going to go a little bit further with you being able to recruit offensive linemen. The development portion of it, I think that's a problem across all of college football and has been for almost a decade now, is developing that position. And that's not college football's fault. That goes down to a lot of different levels of football, because a lot of teams have found ways to work around not having dominant offensive line play. And when you can get that, I think it takes away some of the emphasis of growing that position. I mean, I think tempo in and of itself a lot of times works against that. You go watch teams that run tempo in practice. Watch the way that they practice. Watch the way their offensive line practices. The emphasis is not finishing blocks. The emphasis is getting back to the line of scrimmage as fast as humanly possible after the play is executed. So you essentially take one of the cornerstones of offensive line play and remove it from your DNA. I mean, that in and of itself hurts the development of that position. So I think there's a lot of things that go into it, Greg, but it's not something that you can look back and say, I can point to this or that under Gus that just immediately worked against him as why he couldn't recruit or develop offensive linemen.
No, I mean, and they did a pretty good job with offensive linemen to a certain extent. I mean, anytime you have a guy drafted in the top two is one thing. I mean, like you said, man, this is not a Gus problem. This is not an Auburn problem. This is a college football problem. There are very few programs that have consistently been able to put players in the NFL along the offensive line. More often than not, you have one guy, maybe two, that are legit talents. Very few circumstances would dictate seeing five guys across the board that have NFL potential. Let's use the Texas A&M example as a good one from last year. That was one of the best offensive. Were they a finalist for the Joe Moore Award?
They were. One of three, yes.
Okay, one of three. One of the top three offensive lines in college football. They had one guy get drafted. It was in the fourth round. All right, the other guys are not even.
To be fair, they had
Oscars.
One guy in this year's group that was playing last year that will be drafted pretty high. But yeah.
Correct, he will. But so two out of five. All right, and there might be more that maybe you evaluate down the road, but goodness gracious, man. I mean, having two guys is pretty good. Top three offensive line in college football, yep. Having two guys with legitimate NFL futures. Think about that, all right? Not everybody's Bama. We're all five guys, and maybe even the sixth man and the center guard swing will all go to the league. It's different, and I think that's why Bama's become such a unique circumstance along the front, because they've been the one school in the last decade that's been consistently able to churn out NFL prospects at that position. It just hasn't been the case in other places.
I would agree. And it's something that I believe can and will change based on the folks that are in place right now at Auburn. First and foremost, just the system that they're going to run, the things that they're going to be asked to do, I think you're going to look at and say, okay, that's going to lean more towards doing things that an NFL offensive line is going to do. Brian Harsin's going to have the emphasis on being physical at the line of scrimmage and being able to find ways to run the football. You have Will Friend, who played here at Alabama, as I'm doing the show live from Tuscaloosa, has coached SEC offensive lines for a long time. He's going to understand the recruiting portion of it and how to develop it. And the other things that I like that Brian Harsin has done, you take Brad Bedell, who was his offensive line coach at Boise, and you make him your tight ends coach. Well, some people say, wow, but okay, the tight end's going to be better blockers? Well, no. What that does is it takes someone that has that skill set of understanding how to develop that position, and now you can split your guys up in practice. You can maximize your reps. So Coach Bedell can take the tight ends and left tackles, or he can take the tight ends and the left side. So left tackle, left guard, tight ends, and they can go work. And then you have Will Friend can work center right, and then more guys get more reps. And you don't have to have all five guys together to work on certain things. If you're working your combos, pass pro, if you're working steps in the run game, whatever it is, now all of a sudden you can split that up. And also keeping Kendall Simmons on staff, I think, was something that was a phenomenal move by Brian Harsin, a guy that is one of the best Auburn offensive linemen in school history, has two Super Bowl rings in the NFL. and a guy that gets it, and I know the players like and enjoy being around, and someone who's going to be a good offensive line coach one day. So having him on staff as an analyst, I think, only helps that group. So you have a lot of offensive line brain power on that staff that have done it for a long time. And I think just the emphasis portion of what it's going to mean to the team and the offense and how they're going to run it is going to give him an idea of being able to develop, recruit that position a little bit better. So just kind of my thoughts. Appreciate the call. 800-239-9569. You have things that you want to get into for college football this upcoming weekend. Greg and I are going to begin to run down the games in the SEC and in the top 25. Who do we like? Which direction are we heading? We'll start that process next right here on McElroy and Kublik in the morning. Welcome back in, McElroy and Kublik in the morning. Glad to be with you. I am live from Tuscaloosa. Be on Alabama Mercer this weekend. Greg, live from Fayetteville. Why did you not ask Laura Rutledge or Joe Testator to hop on the show when they were walking past you and trying to get you to laugh on air earlier?
Because we had the bear on at that point. And okay, you'll have to excuse me being out of breath. It's a long run to the bathroom from where I'm currently standing.
You've done the show from the curb. You've done the show from your room.
Correct.
You've done the show from your car. Now where are you doing the show from?
I'm in my car right now. Yeah, I just had to run back to my car.
Back in the hotel and back out.
Safest place to leave the radio equipment.
Probably.
All right.
You could have asked us to just, hey, buy me an extra 60 seconds. I would rather not run to the bathroom. We could have helped you out there.
We can carry it, bro.
Well, I appreciate you guys being willing to do that. The thing that I'm most appreciative of, though, is I no longer have to cram things in like that. Like, I can usually figure things out on my own. Like, I used to have to cram my dental care in. I don't have to do that anymore because I go to Family Care Dental. I'm tired of waiting weeks for dental care, and I need it on my schedule. Or worse, do you have a dental emergency and you can't get immediate help? Well, I'm Greg McElroy. I'm here to tell you about Family Care Dental, the urgent care office where you can be seen the same day. They have three locations, Hoover, Fultondale, and Homewood. They're accepting patients of all ages for emergencies or routine dental appointments. Most insurance plans are accepted, and they can see you on Fridays and Saturdays. Family Care Dental, 874-9605. That's 874-9605.
All right, let's go to Keller in Birmingham. And he wants to talk a certain college football line coming up this weekend. Keller, how you doing, man?
Good. Good morning.
Morning.
I didn't hear y'all mention this Rutgers-Syracuse game when you were talking to the Bear earlier this morning. But I don't know about you guys. I'm really high on Rutgers. I think Shiana's got that program moving in the right direction. And like you, Greg, I've got zero confidence in any of the fringe ACC teams. They play terrible defense. I feel like Rutgers -2.5 is a steal. I'd love to hear what you guys think about that.
Be careful, Greg, my friend loves
the Syracuse team. There's some guys on the Syracuse team Greg really likes.
Easy. I don't love the Syracuse team. I'm dating the Syracuse team. We're married or engaged.
Just courting around a little bit.
I kind of like what I saw from Syracuse last week. They played against what is a really good, and Cole, you can speak to this better. You've seen them in person. Ohio Bobcats, who are they? You like them? Traditionally, do you like who Ohio Bobcats have been?
They're just always tough. They're always physical. Right. They're going to be a team that will, at their level, now obviously we can't just compare them to Alabama or Ohio State, but at their level, they are rarely going to be outmatched in the trenches. That's just the way that they were built.
Yes, and they got absolutely smacked around by a Syracuse team that most people would think, oh, it's Dino Babers. It's finesse. They're going to pitch it around the lot. No, dude, they got a running back number 34. That's a handful.
Sean Tucker. The
offensive line. Yes, offensive line. Pretty dang good. Not saying that it's, you know, Joe Moore Award good, but they have a right tackle that looks like he should be in the WWE that's hairs down to his waist, and he's throwing people around. Maybe not the most gifted athlete in the world, but guy was pretty tough. I thought the offensive line was impressive. Last week, for all intents and purposes, they have some cool things formationally that they do as well. I think Rutgers, their quarterback, watching him last week, all he did was throw bubbles. I mean, every throw he made was at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. So when I watched that tape, I was a little underwhelmed. I expected better from Rutgers. They have a guy named number that wears number 2 That's a handful. And he's a wide receiver. They'll get it to him in jet sweeps. They'll throw it to him on bubbles. He's a lot. But if he can be neutralized by Syracuse's defense, I like Syracuse in this game. I actually take Syracuse outright. That's the way I look at it. I think Rutgers is very hot, very trendy. The public side is, without question, taking Rutgers. I am on the other side. I like Syracuse in this game. I think they're more physical, shockingly enough, and I think they have better personnel, especially at running back.
Okay.
There you go. All right. So GMAC going with the Orange. That would be I'm just going to say, based on week one, that would be a nice win for Syracuse in the ACC. Obviously still Rutgers, but Shiano's going to get it right. Not as right now as it will be, but still they need all the help they can get as a league. B-Love in Locust Fork wants to talk college football on the Michelob Ultra Hotline. Welcome in, B.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to tell you how much I've enjoyed the new show. I was really concerned when the jocks changed the programming. I was afraid what was going to get for a new show, but y'all have done a wonderful job, and it's nice to hear about football all the time and what's going on, and being very descriptive to what's going on, and having two guys that really know what they're talking about, that's actually been on the field and played the game, instead of guys that usually mow the grass on the field. You know, it's been really refreshing to hear from people that know what they're talking about.
Well, B, we appreciate
we appreciate it, buddy.
And, anything on your mind from a college football perspective this weekend?
Well, all the changes that's in college football is what bothers me. It's just, you know, I'm 52 years old now. I remember going to the days of Legion Field and watching football when it was really football, and it's so many changes that really bothers me about the calls for the targeting. You know, 10 years ago, there would just been a really good tackle, but, you know, I heard Greg say on the broadcast on the TV the other night that, you know, when we was little kids, we was always taught, you know, you had to see what you was hitting. If you couldn't see it, you couldn't hit it, you know. But there's a lot of people now that's they see all these highlight films on ESPN, and that's actually what they think football is really all about, you know. And if it don't make a highlight film, that it's not a good play or something. But when you're down in the trenches and you're making a really good play or something, a lot of people don't understand what football, traditional football, is really all about. And it, the overtime rules, you know, it's the way. One thing I was wondering the other night, when we went into overtime with a Notre Dame game, and they said, you know, after the second try, they have to go for two. Well, if they just kept swapping field goals, well, how long did they let that go? Do they just keep on kicking field goals till they finally miss one, or?
Yeah, I think the odds are greater that somebody's going to miss a field goal than you won't keep trading touchdowns. Probably betting on that more than anything else, B-Love. So
in second overtime, basically, I'm a little – yeah, I mean, I think that – I just don't like the idea of the kicking game having any resource whatsoever, but I also think that two –
okay.
It's the truth. I think last week's game, you had 100 players on each side playing an amazing, amazing spirited football game, and it comes down to a Florida State kicker missing a 31-yard field goal or 42-yard field goal. Like, that shouldn't be the way it is. Like, I wish there was no kicking in overtime. Put it at the 10, and let's see who can get the 10 toughest yards there are to get in college football.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what I would do.
Yes, sir.
Take the kicking game. And by the way, you can't kick a field goal. You either score or you're off the field. You got four downs to get there. That's what I'd do, but I'm a barbaric, you know, crazy person.
Yeah, you're from the trenches.
It kind of goes back to McKenzie Milton
leads the whole team back from an 18-point deficit, and it comes down to their kicker that misses it left, and all of a sudden Notre Dame can run it twice. It's anticlimactic, man. I'm just over it.
Well, it goes back to some of the XFL stuff you and I were doing and how much we enjoyed the kicking portion being taken out of certain parts of the game. And I do think it highlighted other aspects of the team. And, I mean, look at last night. Perfect example. I mean, Brady's throwing, you know, three or four balls at the end of that game out of bounds just because he's trying to wear clock and he knows they're going to kick. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think we would have all much rather have seen them had to try to punch that ball into the end zone, but we know that's the safe play. They had the confidence in their kicking game. It's probably what they're going to go do. So, you know, it's I would love when we went to overtime for there to be no kicking. I would absolutely love it. And start it at the 50 if you want and say, here we go. Or if you're going to leave kicking, at least start it at the 50 and so you know you're not immediately in field goal range. And certain teams can say, all right, first down, second down, we don't gain any yards. We're playing it safe on third down. We're going to kick. So essentially now you burn two plays that could have been more entertaining. So it could go a lot of different ways, but you got to try to protect the players, got to try to protect what they're doing. And that was an aspect of that that was put in. And I think if there's a downside to that, Greg, it was probably put in because of one game. And we all know this. And it was A&M and it was LSU. And there was an Ole Miss Arkansas game maybe 7-8 years ago that was also taken into consideration. But I mean, how many 6 and 7 overtime games have we seen to where we had to go make that change? And how many plays are being run in overtime? I mean, yeah, it's more, but it's not consecutive plays back to back to back to back to back. So try to make the game safer, try to do things to protect players, and that was one that they felt like they needed to put in. So you might want to put in the Underdog Fantasy app into your phone because I know I've done it, and obviously NFL started up last night. A lot of different games that you could play. I had to go find a couple that I liked last night to get in on because you got the pick'em format now with Underdog Fantasy. You can pick any 2 to 5 player props. You can parlay those together to win up to 20 times your investment in one night. You've also got over-under. You can pick whether a player is going to go under a given stat line in their game, and there are going to be multiple options all over the place for you to be able to choose and play at Underdog Fantasy. Visit them online at underdogfantasy.com or download the app now. You can find it in your app store. Just search Underdog Fantasy. If you register with promo code RADIO, make a deposit, you're going to get free $25 cash. Underdog's going to do that for you. Just download the app today to start playing, and don't forget to enter promo code RADIO at sign up. If you're somebody like me that just wants to do it occasionally, or you want to set a lineup and let it go for the rest of the year, or you're dialed in, you want to go multiple teams, multiple drafts, get in multiple ways to play every single night differently, you can do it at Underdog Fantasy. Best new place to play fantasy sports, play online, or download the app today. And don't forget to use promo code RADIO when you make that first deposit to get a free $25 in bonus cash. Terms and conditions apply. More college football to discuss. So you can chime in. One more segment to go with what's left on the schedule. SEC slate. We're going rapid fire through the top 25. Rapid fire before we get out for the weekend and head into week 2 of the college football season next right here on McElroy and Kublik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kublik in the morning, 9:44 a.m., Friday, September 10th. Greg, I know a lot of folks have some issues with those army worms floating around in the yard. How should they handle it?
Oh, you know how to handle it. You call the pros at Wayne's Pest Control at 866-WAYNES-1. Army worms are everywhere. It's the worst infestation we've seen in a very, very long time here in Central Alabama. Warning signs are brown spots that resemble drought conditions. I had one in my backyard. I was like, golly, it looked like Vince took his power wheel and did like a skid. I mean, it was yellow. Well, sure enough, I walk outside. There's actual worms in the yard. There's also moss flying around. There are spots on the ends of the blades of grass. Those are all the warning signs. So if you see those, you need to get in front of it now because these things can wipe your yard out in a matter of minutes. It will take very little time for them to completely destroy your yard. So if you've been impacted or want to prevent an infestation, call the pros at Wayne's today at 866-WAYNES-1. That's 866-WAYNES-1. Let Wayne's Pest Control take care of your problems today.
There are not a ton of SEC teams this weekend that can prove a lot to us. I don't think ECU is what maybe we remember them growing up. They're not going to be as dangerous. And South Carolina looked pretty good last week. They're a two-point favorite on the road against ECU. I think the Gamecocks handle their business. Do you have real concern for the Gamecocks in that game, Greg, at all?
Yeah, if I'm going to be real honest, ECU is going to be an absolute zoo. So it'll be a tough environment. Zeb Nolan was a nice story last week. I would say the numbers were a little better than the actual performance, but hey, man, first time playing, tough situation. Let's hope that he can continue to deal what was a relatively hot hand last week. So we'll see. They're going to need it. They're going to need a little momentum heading into Georgia next week. But, man, I think that it's going to be a tall order. Next week.
Right. I think ground game is enough for South Carolina. D-line can be enough. Holden Naylor is just 22 of 40 last week for ECU. I think they can rattle him. I think South Carolina pulls off that win. Tennessee's got a ton to prove, man. I mean, this is not saying the Pitt's a top 10 football team, but for Josh Heupel to be able to get a Power 5 non-conference win, obviously with the Johnny Majors factor going to celebrate his life, will mean a little bit extra. Pitt's a three-point favorite in this game on the road. I just don't know if the Tennessee defense has enough to slow down Kenny Pickett and company. I don't see that happening. The inconsistencies offensively made me a little bit nervous about what I saw from Tennessee last week. I think they'll move the ball. I think they'll find some points. Just don't know if it's going to be enough points. Three, not enough in my opinion. I would play Pitt in this game. Not sure which direction you like, but there's a lot to prove for Josh Heupel in Tennessee either way.
Yeah, I do not like Tennessee in this game. I think Pitt's going to stop the run, and they're going to force you to throw it over their head. And Joe Milton last week not just threw it over the defense's head, he threw it over his receiver's head too by like 30 yards. And he's got to tighten things up with the passing game, got to find more rhythm. I just don't like the matchup at all. I think Pitt's average offensively, but I think on the defensive side they're quite good. So it'll be a tough game, I think, for Tennessee. If they can somehow get the win, that'd be huge. But this is a big one for the ACC as well. One that you look at it on paper, you're going to say, you know, Tennessee's not great. But, man, the ACC has to have it because Pitt's one of the favorites in the Coastal Division of the ACC. And if they were to lose this game and then go on to win the Coastal, what does that do for the ACC down the road as far as the strength of schedule that Clemson might have to try to get to the college football playoff? So this is one that the ACC absolutely has to have. And Pitt's been pretty good on the road for Narduzzi, so it looks like they might get it anyways.
Noon, ABC, Florida at South Florida, Bob Wischusen, Dan Orlovsky, Chris Budden going to be on the call for that game. Dan Orlovsky joins the show Monday at 9:30. We'll get his recap of Florida, ask him about Florida-Alabama heading into that game next week. So that'll be a good start to our Monday. As Paul Feinbaum will join us at 7:30 as well. But this just comes down to quarterback for me. Maybe a little bit that I want to see from that defense, the versatility. Mahmoud Diabate, different places he can line up. Now you have Moon that's not playing outside linebacker. He's going back and playing inside a little bit more. Some of the defensive tackle rotation, trying to ramp those guys up, get them ready for Bama. But not a lot that I really need to see other than how Richardson's going to be used in this game.
Yeah, and I'd like to see Emery be a little bit more rhythmic, a little bit more decisive in the pass game. Eliminate a couple bad decisions. So I think there's a lot to grow, especially on the offensive side, from Florida this weekend against a team that got beat up pretty good last week. So should be a good performance. This is a confidence builder, and they're going to need it, obviously, heading into next week.
We talked a lot about UAB Georgia. Physically, that UAB defensive line, that front seven, tough task, big physical offensive line. Brock Bowers at tight end, Fitzpatrick at tight end, obviously a heavy stable of running backs. I would anticipate Georgia goes right at UAB. The status of JT Daniels, of course, going to be important, but Tyler Johnson and company going to need some plays down the field, Greg. Going to have to find points against a defense that is not easily going to give them up.
No, it'll be hard, and they got to hit at least two or three big plays because I don't think they're going to be able to methodically work their way down the field. It's got to be big plays. And if they can protect Johnston, then they will have a chance to hit those big plays. But, man, if that Georgia team plays inspired like they played last week, it could get ugly in a hurry. The good news is UAB's defense is solid, and they're going to keep Georgia in front of them. I can't imagine they're going to allow Georgia to just pick them apart. And if JT Daniels can't, for whatever reason, go, I don't think Georgia's going to be able to score a ton of points in this game. So I like it, you know, 31-7, 28-7 in that vicinity. And if UAB can hit a couple big plays, who knows? Maybe you think it's 31-17 or 31-14, which would be a pretty good outcome for UAB on a national stage.
Think about an emotional letdown, a little extra time to prepare for Bill Clark. I would play the 24 if you gave it to me for UAB, so that's the side of that one that I would be on. A&M, I think they're fine against Colorado. Didn't see a lot from Colorado that I liked. Do want to see more consistency from Haynes King and cut down on the risk-taking, Greg. Haynes King's not going to be able to play as high risk as he did in the opener, moving into conference play, maybe not even in this game. That's really the only thing that I kind of want to see. Maybe that offensive line get geared up a little bit more for when they get into SEC play. But We know what the weapons look like. We know what the defense looks like. Colorado shouldn't be much of a matchup for Jimbo and company.
See, I actually think Colorado's sneaky dangerous. Win the game, but to make life uncomfortable for Jimbo and company. Like that game.
So you don't think A&M covers a 17?
I do not. I'm taking Colorado in the points.
Okay.
Definitely. That's a lot of points, dude. A&M barely covered last week against Kent State at 29. They needed Kent State to miss a field goal for them to cover last week. At 29, 12 points more against Kent State versus a team that was 5-1 in the Pac-12 last year.
Okay. We'll see. Let's mark it down. I'm going A&M. I'll take the points there.
Mark it down. Homer. Mercer, SEC we know that Homer.
Game. Homer. Talked a lot about Texas and Arkansas. We know what that game is. Hudson Card. Arkansas are going to have to find a way to cool him off a little bit in that game if they're going to find a way to get a win. But that's a big one. I'm excited to sort of go back on Sunday and see how that one goes. Try to catch as much of it as I can on the way home. NC State, Mississippi State. We haven't spent a ton of time on this one, but it's super, super, super interesting. In Starkville, NC State did some nice things last week. Love the backs. Love the running game. Defensively, front seven stout, physical. But you go back and watch State, it was all self-imposed. Five fumbles, they lost all five of them. Will Rogers throws one pick, just a bad decision, rolling out on a little bit of pressure towards the near hash. Didn't see the rover coming over to be able to make the play. A lot of the things that State did bad last week, I think, are easily repairable. But NC State physically is going to be able to give them problems. I mean, La Tech was finding ways, again, with that three-man pass rush. We've talked about this with State. They didn't make the adjustments up front with the offensive line. I don't know if they're ever going to make them. And now you get a team that's a little more athletic, a little stronger, bigger, faster, better up front. I actually think this could be a hell of a game and one that I'm excited to see kind of how it plays out. NC State, 1-point favorite in Davis-Wade Stadium. I'm probably still going to roll Bulldogs on this game because they're at home and because I think they can correct the things that went bad last week easily. And it's basically coin flip, but I'll take State and the one.
I'm going to take the under here. Like, I don't have a good feel for the game whatsoever because I don't trust either offense based on what I saw last week. I think the offenses against their respective defenses, I think defenses have an advantage on both sides here. So I'm going to go with 55.5, take the under, but I have a difficult time picking the winner here. I'm going to lean NC State, but if you look back at NC State over the course of their history, a la the year that they were supposed to make the playoff, Cole, remember that year that everyone was real excited about NC State in the preseason, dark horse ACC favorite. They lose to South Carolina, an average South Carolina team in week one. So they've had some inexcusable losses before. This would be a big one. Not all that dissimilar to what we talked about for the ACC with Pitt involving Tennessee. NC State might be the second best team in the ACC Atlantic. And if they go on the road and lose to a team that might be sixth or seventh best in the SEC West, you got major problems as a league. Major problems as a league. So I think you're looking at a spot, man. If the ACC can't get this win, the ACC is all but done in the eyes of the college football world here in 2022 or 2021. So I think ACC has to have it. I think they will get it. I'm going to take NC State, but I don't feel super confident in it.
The pressure of a conference on their back in Starkville. Anxious to see how that one goes. Ole Miss will
you
be
agree
fine
with that,
Austin
right?
Pitt
with them
home.
And Pitt.
I do.
Like, those are gotta have it situations for ACC.
I think the Syracuse game's big too against Rutgers because they could easily drop that one. I think that one's big. I think there are a couple of games that aren't necessarily going to be at the top of people's list to watch, but that are very important for the ACC this weekend. I do agree with that. They cannot have another bad weekend. Got to flip it around. We mentioned Kentucky, Missouri, LSU, McNeese, Vandy, Colorado State. Not a ton to get into on those last two. Missouri, Kentucky, going to be a good one. Excited for that one. I'll be checking out your game, Texas at Arkansas. I think it's one that has a chance to be interesting for a lot of different reasons. That's 6 p.m. on ESPN, 3 o'clock on the SEC Network, Mercer at Alabama. I'll be on the call with that one with Jordan and Tom. Tell Tess we said hello. Enjoy the call, Greg. Set for another great weekend of college football, man.
Let's have a weekend, buddy. Enjoy it, my friend.
All right, we come back Monday. Paul Feinbaum is with us. Dan Orlovsky is with us at 9:30. You have a great weekend. Enjoy all the games. And we'll see you back here 7 to 10 a.m. on Jocks 94.5, three-man front. coming up to you next, right here.